Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During today's Q&A session, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Today's call is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn today's meeting over to your host, Ms. Stacey Vidal. Thank you. You may begin.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Stacey Vidal from the Census Bureau's Public Information Office. I'm joined by Mary Rice Vargas, Chief of the Ethnicity and Ancestry Branch from the Census Bureau's Population Division, and Matthew Spence, a Senior Advisor in the Census Bureau's Population Division. Thank you for joining us today. We're here to give you an overview of the next two data products coming out from the 2020 Census, the Demographic and Housing Characteristics File, or DHC, and the Demographic Profile. The Demographic Profile provides an overview of the topics covered in the DHC in one easy-to-reference table for a variety of geographies. The DHC provides more detailed tables, many down to the block level. The goal of today's webinar is to help you prepare for the release by knowing what to expect. We'll talk about the types of topics and geographies available in the data products, as well as a variety of resources for understanding and exploring the data. We'll talk through what is new since the previously released 2020 Census data products and what may be different from similar products in 2010. First, let's talk about some logistics. The data will be publicly released on May 25th and under embargo beginning May 23rd. If you would like to request embargo access, please visit our press kit and click the link to register. Please note that you must be accredited media and abide by the embargo policy. The embargo will begin at 10 a.m. on May 23rd and lift at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, May 25th. We expect the data tables to be live in data.census.gov by 10 a.m. on the 25th. We're aiming to have a wide variety of content available to help you explore the data upon release. We expect to have many of these resources available during the embargo period as well. Today, we'll talk through some of the resources in the works. Now, I'll turn it over to Mary Rice to give an overview of the DHC and demographic profile.
Thank you, Stacey. Good afternoon, everyone. We're looking forward to releasing these 2020 census data. We would like to start by thanking you for your participation in the 2020 census and encouraging your friends, neighbors, and community to respond. We're giving these data back to you to help you better understand and benefit your community. First, I'd like to explain where these products fit among other 2020 census data products. We've already released data for congressional apportionment and redistricting. The first was just population counts for states and the nation. The second added information on voting age, race, and Hispanic origin, counts on housing units and major group quarter types down to the local level. The DHC and demographic profile will add even more detail, which we'll walk through today. In August, we'll take the same DHC data and retabulate it for that 118th Congress and new state legislative districts. We know many people are interested in statistics of detailed race and racial and ethnic groups, such as Chinese or Mexican, and statistics for the American Indian and Alaska Native tribes and villages, such as the Navajo Nation. And we will release population counts and age statistics for those groups in September with the detailed DHCA release. Later, we'll provide housing characteristics for those same groups with the detailed DHCB. With the supplemental demographic and housing characteristics file, we'll provide counts of people living with certain households and family structures. We plan to announce schedule information for the detailed DHCB and supplemental DHC by the end of the month. Later, following the DHC release, we also plan to release the Privacy Protected Microdata Files, or PPMFs, and these files will come from the DHC and incorporate all the data included in the redistricting data summary file. You could use these files to generate custom tabulation for numerous geographic levels. As we talk about the demographic profile and DHC, we know many of you may wonder what is different from the 2010 census and will want to compare the 2020 data to 2010. Well, first, some general notes. The 2020 census demographic profile is very similar to the demographic profile from 2010. Both are available down to the truck level. The content will be the same except for a few statistics related to household size that we plan to include in the supplemental DHC instead. For the DHC, its predecessor was the 2010 Census Summary File 1. In some cases, we have less detail available for the DHC than was available in 2010. For certain tables, we collapse detail like age categories to group them into fewer, larger categories. For some tables, we reduce the geographies available. For example, we may produce a table down to the county level instead of the tract. We also remove some tables altogether or plan to release them as part of a later product. These changes have largely been part of our disclosure avoidance efforts. It's our legal responsibility to make sure no one can identify an individual in the statistics we publish. So part of our protections involved trimming some of the granular detail from what we publish. My colleague Matt Spence will talk more about disclosure avoidance in a few minutes. If you're interested in how specific tables and geographies differ from 2010, we invite you to view the 2020 Census Data Product Planning Crosswalk, which is linked to in the press kit. I'll note that we'll be finalizing the crosswalk later this month for the detailed DHCA, detailed DHCB, and SDHC products. This crosswalk can be helpful if you have certain table ID numbers in mind from using the 2010 Summary File 1. If you do, just be aware that searching for them may not pull up the same tables in the DHC because of the table changes. The ID numbers may have shifted. As far as comparing the 2020 data with 2010 data, we'll have two data visualizations available that should be a great starting point for exploring comparisons. Towards the end of today's webinar, Stacy will explain additional resources for finding and comparing data to 2010. I'll also talk through some of the things to keep in mind for each topic. Next, let's talk through the geographies that will be available for the demographic profile and DHC. With the demographic profile, remember that it's one easy-to-reference table for a geography. This can be a great place to start to get an overview of an area. As I mentioned, the demographic profile will be available down to the tract level. This includes the nation, region, state, county, metro and micro areas, congressional districts, state legislative districts, school districts, tracts, urban and rural areas, places and minor civil divisions, think cities and towns, American Indian, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian areas, and CIVCO tabulation areas, which roughly corresponds to the U.S. Postal Service CIV code service route. The DHC will have tables available for all those same geographies, plus a variety of others, including school districts, voting districts, block groups, and census blocks. Now, let's talk more about the subjects. The demographic profile and DHC will provide statistics from all topics covered on the census: age and sex, Hispanic or Latino origin, the major race groups such as white, black, or African American, Asian, et cetera, household and family type, relationship to householder, group quarters population, housing occupancy, and tenure. The power of the DHC is that it will show combinations of many of these characteristics, such as the home ownership rate for the Black or African American alone population and the number of females under age 5 in the Asian alone population. To get a preview of the data tables and what they will contain, we invite you to explore the data table guide linked to the press kit. Now, I'll walk through each of the topics and share what's new about them, some things to consider, and some content to look forward to in helping you explore or understand the data. For age and the demographic profile and DHC, will be the first 2020 census date that provides detail on age groups beyond the voting age population. With the redistricting data, we release population counts for the population 18 and older. And from there, you could subtract out to find the under 18 population. With the DHC, you'll see much more detail on both children and adults. For example, you'll get single year of age for children down to the block level and single year of age for adults to the truck level. Plus, many tables with a variety of age groupings. For sex, these will be the first data on sex from the 2020 census. In the tables, you'll usually see sex crossed by age. One thing you will see in the age data is something called age heaping. When people do not know exactly how old someone is, they often guess ages that end in 0 or in 5. For example, they're more likely to say that someone is 45 or 50 rather than 46 or 49. This is a common issue with a census or a survey where people are allowed to report for another household member or even a neighbor. On release day, we plan to examine the patterns of age heaping in the 2020 in a random sampling blog post. As we release the data, we plan to share information through news release about aging of the nation. We'll have two America Counts stories. One will describe the age and sex composition of the country and how they can differ by geography. The other will focus on the older population, and we'll have two briefs that go into more detail about each of those topics. We're also preparing two data visualizations to help you explore the data. One is an interactive population pyramid. The other is an interactive map showing characteristics for select age groups. The population pyramid is available now with data from 2000 and 2010. I have a screenshot of it on this slide. And on May 25th, we'll add the 2020 data, making it a great resource for exploring how the 2020 data compare to prior decades. The interactive map will also have an option for showing percent change from 2010 to 2020. The demographic profile and DHC will provide the first relationship data for the 2020 census. On the census questionnaire, we asked people how they were related to the first person listed in the household. The answers to this question enable us to publish statistics on households and families. By households, we mean all the people living in a housing unit. This includes people living alone. We define families as two or more people living together who are related by birth, marriage, or adoption. Something to consider is that in 2020, we revised the relationship question to better capture estimates of same-sex couples. We expanded the categories husband-wife and unmarried partner to opposite-sex husband-wife-spouse, same-sex husband-wife-spouse, opposite-sex unmarried partner, and same unmarried partner. Because the question changed, we caution users against comparing the 2020 same-sex couple data with 2010. Changes were also made to how we edited the responses to this question. We will discuss the 2020 same-sex couple data in the America Counts story on coupled households. Couple households are households in which the householder has a spouse or cohabiting partner. This includes opposite-sex married couples, same-sex married, opposite-sex unmarried, or same-sex unmarried couples. The story will look at the prevalence of different types of coupled households. Another America Counts story is both give an overview of changing American families. It will look at trends and types of households over time and will discuss the most common relationships to the householder. In the weeks following the release, we'll publish two additional stories. One will look at the prevalence of multi-generational households or households with three or more generations present, and The other story will look at the prevalence of one-person households at the county level, including one-person households in which the person is age 15 to 64, and those in which the householder is age 65 or older. In the demographic profile, you'll find the household data under the relationship section. In that section, you'll also find information on the population in group quarters. Group quarters are places where people live or stay in a group living arrangement that is owned or managed by organizations providing housing or services to the residents. Group quarters include places such as college residence halls, group homes, military barracks, emergency and transitional shelters, and correctional facilities. The redistricting data included information on just the major types of group quarters or GQs. With the DHC, additional information will be available on the population in GQs by age group, sex, race and Hispanic origin, and group quarter types. As with each census, these results reflect changes in the population since last census. These new counts also provide a snapshot of the GQ population during the COVID-19 pandemic, which impacted the GQ population and how specific GQ populations were enumerated. We talked more about this in an America Count Stories with the redistricting release, which you can find the link in the press kit. Amid pandemic-related challenges, we modified our operations and provided additional guidance to ensure people in group quarters were counted and counted in the right place. Overall, the results for GQs are in line with recent trends and meet our high-quality standards. Even with additional efforts made this decade, as with any census, it is expected that some discrepancies for the counts of the population for individual GQs remain. We will continue to evaluate the 2020 census group quarters enumeration to apply lessons learned to the 2030 census. We don't plan to focus on group quarters in an America Count Stories this time, but you'll find GQ population data in a variety of tables in the DHC and information on the demographic profile. I won't read through them all now, but we've listed the GQ-related DHC tables on the slide for your reference. One table provides more age groups for a table we released with the redistricting data. Another table shows type of group quarters, and it is repeated for various race and Hispanic origin groups. Another table provides information for more detailed GQ types, such as correctional residential facilities, emergency and transition shelters, and group homes. The other table provides information on the population in group quarters by major GQ type, divided into five-year age categories, and sex, repeated for race and Hispanic origin. Regarding housing, these will be the first data from the 2020 census on tenure, meaning whether a home is owned or rented. In addition to tenure data, the DHC will include information on tenure crossed by a variety of householder demographics, such as householder age, race, and ethnicity. And the DHC also includes information on the reasons a unit was vacant, such as rent or sale, or if it's a seasonal unit. There were no major changes to the questions were asked from 2010. So the 2020 census housing data are generally comparable to 2010. We plan to publish an America Count story exploring seasonal vacants. In the weeks following the release, we plan to have a data visualization exploring homeownership by age, race, and Hispanic origin. For race and Hispanic origin, I'll talk about what's new and what to look for first. The DHC provides data on the major race and ethnic groups defined by the U.S. Office of Management and Budget. What's new is that the DHC will cross many of the topics we just described by race and Hispanic origin. In our release materials, we plan to focus on crossing race and Hispanic origin with age and sex. One of our initial America Count stories will specifically look at the age and sex distribution of the Hispanic population. And the weeks following the release, we'll publish another story that discusses the age distribution of the major race groups and the multiracial population. The population pyramid data visualization I mentioned earlier will provide options to explore population pyramids for the different race and Hispanic origin groups. An interactive map will have options for exploring the racial and ethnic diversity index and the largest and second largest racial or ethnic groups for several age groups. As a reminder, the diversity index shows the probability that two people chosen at random will be from different race and ethnic groups. These maps will be available at the state, county, and track level. More information about the diversity measures is available in a blog post about measuring racial and ethnic diversity from the 2020 census. A link is also available in the press kit. We recommend using caution when comparing data between 2020 and the 2010 censuses. If you compare, take into account that we made improvements to the Hispanic origin and race questions and in the ways we code what people report in their responses. These improvements more accurately illustrate the richness and complexity of how people identify the race and ethnicity in the 21st century. Our press kit links to a blog with more information about the improvements made. Data from the redistricting summary file showed different but reasonable and expected distribution from the 2010 census for a few groups. The white alone, some other race alone, or in combination and multiracial populations, especially for people who self-identify as both white and some other race. These results are not surprising, and they align with the Census Bureau research this past decade, particularly with the results from the 2015 National Content Test about the impact of question format on race and ethnicity reporting. I just want to remind everyone that the Hispanic origin and race counts in the DHC are the same as the redistricting file. I've now covered all the major topics that will be available in the demographic profile and DHC. So I will now turn it over to Matt Spence to talk about how our disclosure avoidance methodology affects the data. Matt?
Thank you, Mirabis. Good afternoon, good morning if you're west of the Mississippi. So all of that detail Mirabis has talked about today will be available. The characteristics, the small geographies, the combinations of those characteristics with each other. That detail really illustrates the need for the Census Bureau to carefully protect the underlying response data. We don't want anyone to be able to identify an individual by looking at the data tables for community. So for these products and all Census Bureau data products, we use disclosure avoidance methods to protect respondent confidentiality. For the 2020 census data, we've added statistical noise, that is small random additions or subtractions, to the data to protect the confidentiality of the people who responded. By adding this noise, no one can link the published data to a specific person or household with any certainty. We've worked closely with the data user community to implement these protections. Thank you to the many people who provided feedback as we've been fine-tuning them. Today, I'd like to explain how the protections affect the published data and provide some guidance in using them. So, how does the noise affect DHC data? Well, we recently released some metrics based on the 2010 data run through the standard production software that can help you anticipate how closely the DHC results will likely to be from the enumerated count following disclosure avoidance. For example, we can see from these metrics, let's take the count of owner-occupied housing units, for example. That would likely be within about two houses on average at the census tract level. That means for an example tract with 725 owner-occupied houses, we might instead show 723, 724, 726, or 727. it should be within that boundary of gaining or losing two on average, though some tracks will have counts within one or zero. Other tracks will have published counts further away than that boundary of two. As another example, the count of four-year-olds would likely be within about six people at the county level. The average county had about 1,923 four-year-olds. With this average amount of statistical noise, that county would show a count somewhere between 1,917 to 1,929. We're exploring releasing similar metrics comparing the published 20 census tables to the enumerated counts. Specifically, we're exploring releasing mean absolute error, which gives insight on accuracy. Like those examples above, it shows how close or how far off the published data point is to the enumerated count on average. If you think of a bullseye on a dartboard, the mean absolute error tells you how close you are on average to that bullseye. We're also going to explore mean error, which gives insight on statistical bias. It shows whether the published data point tends to go higher or lower than the enumerated count and by how much. Since we don't allow negative numbers in the published tables, that means that small populations might have a small positive statistical bias. That is, those published counts might tend to be higher than the enumerated count. Going back to that dartboard analogy, the mean error would sort of show whether the points tend to be clustered to the left or to the right, a little bit too low or a little bit too high. We're exploring producing these metrics for many of the same characteristics and geographic levels as we did for each of the DHC demonstration data products we've released over the past few years. The metrics would give data users a direct measure of the noise added for disclosure avoidance and the best picture so far of the disclosure avoidance-related variability in the DHC. It's important to note that the 2020 census is the first to be able to quantify this kind of variability because it uses a more sophisticated approach to disclosure avoidance. Another thing I'll note here is that our methods add statistical noise to the person and housing unit counts separately. This occasionally leads to some implausible results, especially for lower-level geographies. For example, you may find data in your area that show more homeowners of a particular race than people of that race. You may also see inconsistencies among the tables, such as the number of householders not matching the number of occupied housing units. So what does this all mean for how you use the data? Well, because of the way that noise was added and because larger geographies are less prone to these implausible results, we recommend keeping a few things in mind. Number one, we encourage you to aggregate small geographies. For example, you might see noisy census blocks. That's how you know the protections are working. To reduce some of that noise, you can add up census blocks together in the DHC. As you add up the blocks, the noise in one starts to cancel out the noise in another. Secondly, we encourage you to consider aggregating small populations. If you have a cell in a table with a really small number, you might want to group it with another cell. For example, you might add single-year age groups together to reduce noise and instead rely on five-year age groups, for example. Also, the last thing to note is that if you come across something really unexpected in the DHC results, it may not always be a result of disclosure avoidance. There are several other factors that could be at play, such as when or where people were counted in the census. We explained some of those reasons on the What to Consider If You Find an Unexpected Census Result webpage, which is also linked to in the press kit. For more information about disclosure avoidance, I invite you to read our blog on what to expect that we released this morning. It also touches on some additional resources still in the works to help data users dive in even more to the technical aspects. With that, I'll turn it over to Stacy to talk through some of the resources that will be available.
Thanks, Matt. So let's talk about some of the key ways to access the demographic profile and the DHC data. The data visualizations we've talked about should be a great place to start, and we'll have a video available that describes how to use them. The visualizations will include some ranking tables, which will also post as Excel and CSV files so you can download and filter or sort them as you need to. The full set of data tables will be available on data.census.gov. The demographic profile is another great place to start there on data.census.gov. If it helps you to dive in, from our demographic profile data page, we'll offer a drop-down menu that lists the states. You can select yours, and it will take you right to the table on data.census.gov. From there, you can change the geography to look at other areas. If you would like to start from data.census.gov, we'll have a how-to guide available with some screenshots to guide you through finding the demographic profile. For the DHC, we'll link to some of the most popular tables from our DHC data page, and we'll provide short videos and how-to guides with screenshots on using data.census.gov. The videos and guides will cover accessing the DHC data, finding blocks using a map, exploring data for urban and rural areas, downloading and exporting data, and comparing 2010 and 2020 data. We've actually already posted a couple of how-to guides to help you get started on finding 2010 data. If you're looking to download the data in a pipe delimited format, the DHC data will be available in a summary file. You can learn more about the summary file in the technical documentation. And we'll have an API, along with a couple instructional videos and how-to guides on using the API. Finally, we're offering another webinar on May 30th, specifically about accessing the DHC and demographic profile data on data.census.gov. That webinar will walk through finding data at different levels of geography, using the mapping feature, and more. So we invite you to tune into that as well. To recap, this wealth of data is scheduled for public release on May 25th. If you're an accredited member of the media, we invite you to register for embargo access. The embargo begins at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on May 23rd. During the embargo period, you'll have access to the news release, the data on data.census.gov, America Count Stories, and a variety of video tutorials and how-to guides. On May 25th, we'll make all of that available to the public. Most of the links will be live around 10 a.m. In the weeks that follow, we expect to have additional America Count Stories and other content coming out. And we'll be available to help answer questions as well. So with that, let's open up for questions now. We have some of our other colleagues standing by to help answer questions about the DHC and demographic profile. If you have questions on other topics related to the Census Bureau, we'll invite you to contact the Public Information Office or our Customer Service Center, and we can work with the right subject matter experts to answer those for you too. Operator, would you provide instructions for getting in the queue?
Sure. As a quick reminder, if you'd like to ask questions, please press star then one. Remember to unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. If you'd like to withdraw that question, you may press star two. Again, to ask a question, please press star followed by one. One moment for the first question.
While we wait for our first question, I'll call your attention to the press kit again. We talked about that a lot today, and thanks for Christina dropping that link in the chat, as well as a lot of the links that we've been talking about. So Mara Reese and Matt mentioned many resources available to you. So for example, the data table guide can give you a preview of the tables that will be available, and the background section of the press kit has links to a variety of the blogs and other resources that we've been talking about. Operator, are we ready for our first question?
Yes, and our first question comes from Jonathan Buttle. Your line is open.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. You had mentioned that during the embargo period, the tables will be available on data.census.gov. Will they also be available on the FTP site? Thank you.
Yeah, great question. No, they will not be available on the FTP site. And I'll note, too, about getting the data on data.census.gov, you will need to go through the embargo site through the PIO newsroom. So just heads up on that part.
Thank you.
Okay, next question? Sure.
Next question comes from Hanzi Lo Wong. Your line is open.
Thank you. The America Count Stories that Maris mentioned that are coming out on May 25th, what time are they coming out on the 25th, and will they also be available for embargo on the 23rd?
Yeah, Hansi, great question. Thanks for that. We do plan to have at least one of the – well, Maris talked through a lot of different stories. A bunch of them, I think we have six planned that will be available during the embargo period, so once that gets started on Tuesday. And then if any of those don't have any of the stories ready for the embargo, those would come out on the 25th. And then there will be some that will come, we know that will be coming later because there's so much great stuff coming out. For things that will come out on the public release day, around 10 a.m. is what we're aiming for all of that stuff to be up.
If I could use my follow-up question, why is the data release for the public on data.census.gov? Why is that at 10 a.m. when the embargo is lifted at 12:01 a.m. Eastern? Why isn't the public able to access, you know, all the data tables once the embargo is lifted?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, too. It has to do with loading everything onto our system for data.census.gov. It takes a little bit extra time. So the news release will be live, and the public will be able to see that, like, right around 12:01 a.m. on our newsroom, but the tables won't actually be live on that platform until around 10 a.m. We may come a little earlier, but that 10 a.m. is what we aim for as our goal, is it totally being out by then.
Thank you.
Sure. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Mike Snyder. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for having this. My question was for Matthew Spence. I was wondering what you would say to data users, and I'm thinking maybe of like a small town planner in a community of less than 500 people who feels somewhat betrayed or disappointed in that, you know, they made every effort to get out the count during the 2020 census, yet they feel that they might not have the same access to the data they did in 2010, or they feel that the data aren't accurate because of differential privacy, or they feel stymied by the delay in the release of this data.
Thanks for that question, Mike. Matt, would you like to take a stab at that one?
Sure thing. Yeah, that is, you know, absolutely. The delays, I'll start with that one. The delays are very regrettable. You know, we did our best to get the data out in a timely manner. But, you know, as you know, we had this global pandemic, which delayed collection, and then, you know, we wanted to take all the time we needed to do quality data response processing to ensure we had the best quality data to publish when we did end up publishing. So we're very excited about the data that are coming out. What I would tell a, you know, small town planner is that we worked very hard to make sure that the data were accurate, even at small geographies and even for small populations. For example, just I'm looking at the 2010 metrics here for incorporated places. These are, you know, cities and towns that have a legal entity. There are about 6,000 of them in 2010 that had a population below 500. That bullseye number, that mean absolute error, that accuracy number is under 2. So that means that they can know that their count was within 2 people of the enumerated count for the total population. And we got additional accuracy even for things like single year of age at the county level, single year of age at the school district level for children. We've done a lot to increase the accuracy over the 9 demonstration data products that we've put out over the last few years. I would encourage the planner to look at the metrics. And again, think of the bullseye metaphor where the mean absolute error is sort of how close or how far are we? And I think that the planner will be pleasantly surprised with the accuracy.
Great. Thank you. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Jeremy Novak. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, longtime listener, first-time caller. So I work for the State Department of Transportation, and I am looking to get official, you can't see me use the air quotes, but official city and location populations. Now, will this data provide the official city population? Can I get that from this, or is that going to be released in another data set?
Yeah, great question. Thank you for that. So yes, these are official 2020 census counts. As you look for the data in the tables, the geography level, like the Census Bureau term we use for Lake City, is place. So look for that word, place, or maybe minor civil division, depending upon what area you're from. So look for that level if you search for the data, but that should get you those city and town numbers you're looking for. And if you have any issues, like, feel free to give us a call, and we can help walk you through that as well. Great. Next question, please.
Thank you. Now, next question comes from Lori Weisberg. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I have a specific housing question. Obviously, I know this is going to be the most accurate data on home ownership, and you can cross it with demographic profiles, and you get it down to low-level geography. But the Census Bureau also has the current population survey, you did the annual and quarterly release of homeownership data for large metro areas. I'm just curious, and obviously that's the most recent, 2022. I'm curious, do you think that at that level of metro area or county level, that the census data will be similar or very close in numerically to that kind of data that you release? For instance, like if you looked at the 2020 annual homeownership that was released in that survey, or do you think that you're going to see differences because this is obviously a house-by-house survey?
Thank you for that question about housing. Let me turn to my colleague, Evan. Are you available to answer that question?
Yep. So, yeah, one thing I would recommend is that each survey has its different uses. And the important thing to remember is that this is 2020 census data. So with the CPS, you're going to get more timely data than this data. That being said, the CPS also has margins of error. So depending on the size of the metro area you're looking at, the 2020 census might be the most accurate source. But again, the CPS is probably more timely than this 2020 data. So hopefully that helps.
Okay, thank you so much.
Great, thank you. Next question. Before we take it to, I'll note back to the prior caller's question about looking for official census counts for cities and towns. Those are actually already available now through the redistricting data release. So you should be able to find that through, we have, on our press kit, we have like related data, you look for that redistricting one. And then the beauty of like this particular release is going to add a lot more of this character, the other characteristics and topics that we talked about today too. So I wanted to throw that in there. Operator, are we ready for our next question?
Yes, our next question comes from Patrick. Your line is open.
You collect data for local settlements, so for example, if you're ballot, you indicate country of origin.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I think we're having your a little garbled. Could you try that again?
Yeah, I was thinking
not much better.
Is that better?
Yes, that is better. Thank you.
Oh, looks like we lost him.
We lost them. Okay. So if you have trouble getting through, I also invite you again to give us a call in our public information office or email us a question too at pio@census.gov, and we can work with you from there. All right. Next question.
Our next question comes from Pamela White. Your line is open.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for this. This is very interesting. And I had a question about metropolitan and micropolitan statistical areas. I read back in the Federal Register a few years back that a major change was going to come out in 2023 on those. And I wanted to know, are those changes incorporated in your information or not, or will they be released sometime later, and when would that be?
Let me say, I know one of our experts who's totally the expert on metropolitan and micropolitan statistical areas wasn't able to join us for this call, but let me just check if Vince, who works with our geography division, if you happen to know the answer to that question, if those MSAs are included in this release.
No, this is Vince Osher, as Stacy said. Our changes that they're doing to the metropolitan and micropolitan statistical areas are to be published by OMB on the last day of June of this year. So they're not in these data products. They'll be taken in by the American Community Survey for their releases later, but no decennial products will have them.
Okay. Do you know if the effective date, if it's released on June 30th, when will they be effective for data collections?
It'll be the day they're released, technically.
The day released. Okay.
But it will take us, once OMB publishes, it takes us about 2 to 3 months to get them into our systems, and then maps starting to show those new ones will come out later in this year.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Great,
sure.
Thank you. Great. Next question, please.
The next question comes from Laura Cross. Your line is open.
Hi, another geography question for you. Connecticut changed their geography since April 2020. I think it was 2021, maybe. Does this release have the new geographies or the geographies as they existed in 2020?
This is Ben Sozier again. I'll take this, Stacy. They will not. This product will not reflect the changes to Connecticut. Those, much like the metropolitan, micropolitan statistical areas, will start showing up in our data products now, but are not part of the decennial 2020 census products.
Okay, thank you. And is there any possible mapping between, you know, this block group is now this block group for this county or whatnot, or is that does that exist at all?
We've done it for internal work, and I think it would be fine sharing it if you, how do you want them to reach out to us? Casey.
Yeah, if you email PIO@census.gov, we can work with Vince and his team on that.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Great. Thank you. Great. Next question.
The next question comes from David. Did not get your last name. Your line is open.
Oh, I don't remember if I put a last name. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wasn't sure if it was me or somebody else. Two questions. Is there going to be any analysis that will show the differences between the decennial surveys and other types of surveys, ACS, housing surveys, things like that, if the numbers are different? Is there some place that will show how different they will be? That's the first question. The second question is, earlier in this webinar, they talked about the various levels of geography, and they got down to the zip code level, but as I understand it, the data itself only goes down to the tract level. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, thank you for those questions. So the first question about analysis with other, like other data sources, I don't believe in any of the products we have planned coming out with the data released will really touch on that. Some of them will talk about changes over time from 2020 back to 2000, or sorry, one of the data visualizations goes back to the 2000, but the other ones might look back to 2010. Mary, if you want to chime in, do the blog that you're thinking of may help.
Yeah. So this is Merari's Rios. Oh, let me turn that video on. There you go. So we do have a blog that was released before the DHC where we do compare the census to the population estimates as of April 1st, 2020. So we are more than happy, Stacey, I don't know, to share the link. So then you can look at how the data compares. Overall, it shows how the 2020 census did show larger counts compared to the 2020 population estimates. For example, we looked at it by age. We also looked at it by Hispanic origin and race. And so you'll be able to see those differences there to see how the census 2020 compared to benchmarks. Again, we're happy to share that link with you, Stacy, so you can pass that along.
That would be great. Thank you. And so feel free to email PIO@census.gov. Marisa, maybe something we can add to the press kit later as well. That's great. And then I think for your second question was about geography. So we are planning to release the ZICTAs or zip code tabulation area data for both the DHC, although it's not all of the tables, it's a selected number of tables, and for the demographic profile. I'll pause there and see if any of my colleagues wanted to chime in on that part about the geography.
This is Ben Sozier again. Yeah, we provided the ZICTAs to the statistical areas, but I can't speak as to what data is released for them or not.
Yeah. So, again, ZICTAs will be available for both demographic profile and some of the DHC tables. Some of the DHC tables will also be available for some other lower level geographies that go below tract, like census block groups or census blocks.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Paul Overberg. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to follow up on the earlier question, the one about the FTP server. And I just want to verify, it sounded like you were saying that it would not be available during the embargo period. So that means the summary files will not be available during the embargo period.
Yeah. Hi, Paul. Thanks for that question. That is correct. The FTP site will not be available during the embargo period. Checking with my colleagues, like any in the summary file, that goes for the summary file as well, correct? Yes. Okay. Yeah, so sorry, that the FTP site and the summary file will not be available on embargo, but will be available come Thursday, May 25th.
Okay, I guess my follow-up question is, has data.census.gov been load tested lately?
I'm sorry, Paul, say that again. Is data.census.gov, and I missed the last part.
Has it been load tested lately?
Yeah. Load tested. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm sure somebody's looking into that because we do anticipate a lot of interest. So. Great. So are we ready for our next question, operator?
Yes, the next question comes from Alicia. Your line is open. Alicia, if you're there. Your line is open. Okay, not getting a response. Our next question comes from Sarah Bird. Your line is open.
Thank you. And thank you for all the information presented in today's webinar. I was wondering.
Sarah, would you mind speaking up just a little bit? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Yep. Is this any better?
Yes, thank you.
All right. I appreciated the crosswalks you all have provided when it comes to the decennial 2020 and decennial 2010. I was wondering if you provided a crosswalk, specifically the tables and then the like, dictionary reference names even between the decennial 2020 and the current ACS.
Let me see if I understand your question. I'm not sure if I heard it quite right. Are you asking about the best way to look up the table in data.census.gov, asking whether by like the table name or something like that? Is that what you're asking?
More from like a query perspective. So if it's table P2 from decennial 2020, which ACS table, you know, like B01, 001, does it map to? And then if you had more granular mapping too.
So, one thing is it's the ACS part of it that I think is throwing me off, and I'm not sure the best way to provide you a resource for it. We do have a data table reference guide that's available from the press kit that will have that lists all the tables that will be available for this for the DHC release. There's also a crosswalk from that's a separate document that's linked to from the press kit as well that crosswalks what the tables are from 2010 and from 2020. I will note, like Mary's mentioned earlier, you know, some of the table numbers are different, maybe some of the same contents there, but because of the shifts in the tables, it may not have the exact same number. So that's something. And I don't think we have a crosswalk that maps to the ACS available. So if you would like, though, you can email pio@census.gov. And if you have some particular tables in mind that you may be looking for, we can try to like look those up specifically and try to help guide you to what might, you know, the best resource might be for those. All right. Operator, we may have our next question.
Yes, our next question comes from Susan Strait. Your line is open.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, great. I had a question on the disclosure avoidance metrics for Census 2020 data. You mentioned that you will be publishing the mean errors for each statistic and geographic level. Can you also publish the range of errors associated with each of these? These would be important to help data users assess the fitness for use from these statistics. Thanks.
Thank you for that question. Matt, I'll turn it to you.
Thanks. That's a great question. At this point, we are working diligently to get those two numbers out to you, sort of that accuracy measure, again, how close to the bullseye, how tightly packed around the bullseye, and then the mean error, which tells us whether we're off in one direction or another, too high or too low. We also would like to add to those 2020 metrics, and we're working on that as well. So we'd like to add quantiles, which will tell data users, for example, you know, 95% of the tracts, say, had their, say, white alone population within these two numbers, say, -6 to +6, or, you know, -10 to +10. We're working on those kinds of quantiles to be able to set, you know, to be able to give that data feedback. But because this is using live 2020 data and comparing to a private enumerated count, that means that we have to take extra precautions to protect those and make sure that we calculate them correctly. So those are forthcoming, but they will not be available in concert with the DHC data release. We are hoping to release them later on. Additionally, something that I'd like to tease for the future, that we are actually going through this whole process where we are running the same disclosure avoidance technique many, many times, 25 times or 100 times even, to see what's the expected range of outcomes for particular geographies. So we could even dive down and say this particular tract in Montgomery County, Maryland, or this particular county, say Los Angeles County, for this particular statistic, how much did it change across those 25 runs or across those 100 runs? But again, that research is still forthcoming. We did discuss and show a preview of that research at last month's Population Association of America annual conference, and we have information we'd be happy to share the slides from that if anyone wants to contact PIO.
Great. Thanks for that, Matt. All right, operator, I think we have time for one last question.
Okay, and our next question comes from Bruce Schultz. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to clarify, and forgive me if it's been asked and I missed it. When does the anticipated area median incomes, when should those be updating?
I'm sorry, say that again, the anticipated what part?
Area median income for 2023. Is that something that you all released directly, or is that more through FFIEC for like CRA purposes under the Community Reinvestment Act?
I think if you can email us at PIO@census.gov, we can work on that question for you. As you probably know, that the income questions weren't part of the 2020 census. We asked about that on other surveys, though, and I can make sure that you're that we understand like which particular survey that you're looking for. For example, the American Community Survey has a lot of great detail on income and other topics, so that may be the one you're asking about, and that usually comes out in the fall.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. I'll send the email.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in today and for asking questions. If we didn't get to your question or if you have other questions following the webinar, please feel free to reach out to us. Information's on the screen, but just a quick reminder, you can, if you're a member of the media or if we said, hey, go ahead and email us, feel free to do that at the Public Information Office at PIO@census.gov. Or if you're not a member of the media, please feel free to call us at 1-800-923-8282. And then, again, watch out for that the press kit link. We're going to have a lot of information on there now already, and, of course, we'll be adding to that on public release day. So with that, we'll go ahead and conclude today's webinar. We will post a recording and a transcript from today's webinar on the press kit in the next few days. We also invite you to complete the evaluation form. As Anthony has noted, once you close out, that'll pop up. So please, that helps us to know how we can improve these webinars for you in the future, and we hope it has been helpful. So thank you for joining us, and please reach out to us if you have questions. Thank you.
Speakers, you may stand by for post-conference. To everyone else, thank you. That concludes today's conference. You may all disconnect at this time.